As policymakers push for a return to normalcy in summer 2021, we gather Iowa medical experts to assess the situation. Checking the pulse of our pandemic health and safety on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Iowa PBS is supported in part by Wells Fargo. Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Celebrating nearly 50 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa PBS. This is the Friday, May 21 edition of Iowa Press. Here is David Yepsen.
The signs of a post-pandemic return to normal are increasing. Vaccines have reached a broad section of the adult American population. The federal government has passed massive economic stimulus programs. And state government in Iowa has concluded a legislative session with bills to prevent local schools from enforcing mask mandates. To examine what a new normal for Iowans may look like, we've gathered a pair of Iowa physicians. Dr. Megan Srinivas is an infectious disease physician with experience in underserved rural populations. She previously ran for the Iowa House as a Democrat in 2018. And to Dr. Layla Best is an infectious disease specialist for Unity Point Des Moines, where she leads outreach into smaller healthcare affiliates. Welcome to you both. Thank you for making time for us.
Thank you for having us.
Also joining us across the table is Aaron Murphy, Des Moines Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises, and Radio Iowa News Director Kay Henderson.
Dr. Srinivas, this past week, Governor Reynolds signed a bill that said that schools cannot have mask mandates and cities and counties cannot force businesses to have mask mandates. What is your reaction?
It's very concerning because a lot of what happens when it comes to any type of control of whether it's a pandemic or a local outbreak really needs to be looking at the local statistics, the local transmission issues, and thus put into place local rules to control immediately anything that might occur. With our local populations now being really handcuffed in this fight against the pandemic, it's going to create larger obstacles for the state to have to overcome in the long term.
Parents complain to legislators that it should be their decision and that it was government overreach, number one, and they complain that it's better for their kids to be in school in a learning environment where they can see everyone's, their teacher's face and their colleague's face, and that it should be their decision. What's your reaction to that?
Well, there's a few things. One, masks do not prevent somebody from utilizing their vision. Masks really cover your nose, your mouth, and really should not be obstructing your vision at all. And if it is, then we need to do a better fit on your mask. So that's the first misconstrue issue right there. The second issue is, if it's the parent's choice, then we have a problem with that child who might have been exposed, who might be at higher risk of being exposed because their parents might not believe in vaccination or in masking, then being the person that brings in the virus to school. And the mask only protects those really around you, not the wearer themselves.
Dr. Best, what's your answer to Kay's questions?
In, as a physician and as a mother, I'm very concerned because I agree with Dr. Rinivas that kids are not fully vaccinated yet. They can still transmit the infection. And remember that we still have these pockets of folks that are considered vulnerable in the community, maybe grandparents or parents who are on medications that decrease the immune system. And we don't know how strong of immune system they can develop against the vaccine. So we need to be very cautious with that. And I agree that we have to be careful when we say it is it's our right to use a mask and decide when our kids want to do it, because as we have stated, we want to prevent the rest around us. And we need to remember that as of now, we don't have kids fully vaccinated. And it was kind of surprising to me that this happened 2 weeks from the end of the school year.
So who should be making this policy? And Dr. Best, we'll start with you. Is there not something to be said for having a statewide policy so there's no confusion? Or should it be local school boards? Should it be local public health departments? Where should these policies be coming from?
And when you ask me that, I kind of start thinking about what I felt that it's been a failure throughout the whole pandemic. And it's been the miscommunication, the lack of alignment between the message that the science experts, the healthcare providers are giving with the lawmakers' message. And this is what is creating a lot of confusion in the community. I wish we had a unique message that was out there to the community. I have to recognize that as a health system, we've been very strong about that, trying to bring accurate and timely information to the community in different ways, social media, in our own website, and small videos to educate the community about it.
Dr. Srinivas?
I have to agree a lot with what Dr. Best is saying. This pandemic has really presented a unique situation where we've siloed people who are experts in the subject matter away from the policymaking aspect. In the past, when it comes to salmonella outbreaks, E. coli outbreaks, even when we're looking at hepatitis A outbreaks in this country, we've always seen that partnership happening. When it comes to other public health issues, such as smoking in public, we see that partnership happening between the experts and the people who are making the policies. The fact that the science is being turned into a partisan issue is really concerning, and it has been throughout this pandemic.
Dr. Best, you mentioned that communication and education, the CDC recently adjusted its recommendations on masking, and there was some timing with the way it played out in the news cycle that made people, some people kind of push back and said, well, they're sending us mixed signals. How do you feel? Has the federal government, has the CDC been solid and consistent in its messaging to the people about what precautions they should be taking, when it is and isn't the right time to wear face masks, or could they have done a better job with that?
And unfortunately, when we think about all these changes, we find a lot of confusion. I totally understand the community, the folks in the community being confused, because we change sometimes, I mean, in the past, every other week we were changing recommendations, and that can get very confusing for people. But we need to admit and recognize that what the CDC is stating with the recent mask mandate guidance changes is based on what we've learned from the protection of the vaccines that we know that actually are very effective, and we are allowing fully vaccinated people to be able to not wear a mask. But we need to start by defining who are the vaccinated, fully vaccinated patients or folks in the community. And those are the ones that got their two shots of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine or one shot of Johnson plus 2 weeks after that. We cannot extrapolate that to people who has been not vaccinated or kids who are not even fully vaccinated yet.
Dr. Srinivas, let me ask you the follow-up question. What do you say to people who say that the problem with all these mandates and these do this, do that thing is, number one, stuff seemed to change all the time. 1 week there was one set of rules, and another week there was another thing. And the second one is, the cure has been worse than the disease. We shut down the American economy. People lost their jobs. They were put in their homes. There were mental health issues involved. Children wearing masks, scared. What do you say to that? That you know, this wearing a mask may be the right thing to do, but it came at a price.
So the issue with that comparison is it's really a false dichotomy. There's been this whole false narrative that it's either livelihoods or life, when in reality they go hand in hand. If we had been able to follow through with a lot of these mitigation techniques, such as wearing a mask, we could have easily opened up Iowa a lot sooner, bolster our economy, enable people to safely go about shopping, go about seeing, going to restaurants, being able to have a little bit more normalcy than we've had throughout this entire past year. But the issue is, if we don't do mitigation, then we're going to have complete uncontrolled spread. And that's when things need to be tightened to control the spread, save people's lives, not overwhelm our healthcare system. And having this false narrative has only created more misinformation. And a lot of that goes back to the messaging that Dr. Best was referencing, having our policymakers and our experts at the same table agreeing on the messaging.
Dr. Best, I'll start with you. Just give me the state of the coronavirus right now in Iowa. What's going on with it?
Well, as you know, the infection rate has decreased. It has taken very long time to do that, I think. In my perspective, we could have done probably a better job with that. As Dr. Srinivas mentioned, by following some of the mitigation measures and being compliant with that. And now that we have the vaccine, we are seeing, you know, more than 1.2 million of people already vaccinated. And as of now, I believe it's 2.5 million people at least that has gotten the first shot of the vaccine. My concern is that if we go back to living up to the people, up to the folks using or wearing their mask, we may see increase in the transmission rate, and we are going to go backwards rather than keep going with the solution of this. We want to get out of the vaccine, and I feel that the way how we can get out of this pandemic is by being vaccinated. We need to be very careful that this is... I tend to talk to my residents sometimes, like, this is a marathon against the variants. We need to be ahead of all the variants that we have.
Dr. Srinivas, same question. What's the state of the coronavirus?
So as Dr. Best was alluding to, we really only have about 40% of our population fully vaccinated here in Iowa. And unfortunately, when we have such a low vaccination rate and we try to go back to a normal, completely normal style of living without masks, without mitigation, despite having a presently relatively low transmission rate of about 3%, that's going to spike. Because if people act like they're now immune to the virus, even if they haven't gotten the vaccine, that's only going to create more vectors for the virus to infect and spread. And if we continue to do that unmitigated, we're going to have a resurgence after we've worked so hard to really keep things down.
Is there danger that we're letting the good times roll a little too soon?
Very much so. And this is what happened last June. As the WHO even alluded to yesterday during their announcement, we let the good times roll a little bit too soon during the summer last year, thinking things were outdoors, and we started to see massive spikes all over the world. And right when we're about to get on top of it, we don't want to let that happen again.
Dr. Best, public health agencies in 99 counties in Iowa were asked to do things that they've never done before. What is the status of public health and its outreach in Iowa?
Well, I mean, we all have improvised and learned a lot through this pandemic. I can tell you personally, as a physician, as an infectious disease doctor, this last year has been, or 15 months, I believe, it's been, I'm counting, it's been like a roller coaster of emotions and learning a lot. I step into different arenas completely different to what I do on a normal daily basis for my patients, which is normally seeing patients in the hospital and in the clinic all the time, into going, being part of committees as part of the central incident command for the system, while trying to help the system to be prepared and roll out over the pandemic. So we all have to adjust. This has been a very difficult year for everyone, even for the kids, for healthcare workers. So we need to keep a very open mind that we all are learning, and we are actually changing policies and recommendations based on the most recent updated information from science, and we need to be very open to that.
Dr. Srinivas, you mentioned the vaccine rollout. We are at a point where the demand has waned for getting the vaccine. Are we at that kind of saturation point where everyone who has really wanted it has it, and now we're trying to get to those people who are holding out for whatever reason? Is that where we are in the rollout, essentially?
I wouldn't quite say we're there yet. there are still people who, just because it really opened up widely in April to everyone, there are still people who are finishing their second vaccine or who are in the process of really scheduling their first vaccine towards the end of April. So there's still that lag period where that information has to get to people and then people have to start signing up and doing things. But then there's a whole nother population, the children, who really haven't had the opportunity. And we just opened it up to 12 to 15-year-olds. And we're going to see a lot more people getting vaccinated. Hopefully, with the trials that are happening now, we'll have even younger children being able to get vaccinated before school starts.
How soon might that happen?
So right now, the trials have been ongoing for a couple of months. I'm hopeful that we'll get some information and even have an EUA in process before school starts in the fall. But, of course, it's all going to depend on what the clinical trials show.
Dr. Best, once we get through those groups and there is that remaining population left that, for whatever reason, they haven't gotten the vaccine yet, how do we encourage more people to sign up so we get to a point where we feel confident that enough people have been vaccinated to get us through this pandemic? How do we reach those people and that may be on the fence right now?
I think it's very important education to the community. I feel that there are many, many folks out there that are refusing the vaccine because they are afraid. They hear things about the vaccines. They have some myth that, you know, prevent them from getting vaccinated. And I think it's very important for us as a physicians to be available for our patients to talk to them through those. I always like to take the opportunity when I see patients in my clinic for follow-ups of other reasons or other diagnoses to talk about, have you been vaccinated? And without pushing, because I'm not pushing people or making them get the vaccine, but I want to understand what their fears are. And I've been very happy to be able to help some of them. Some of them are completely refusing, and I cannot do anything else about it. But I think it's very important, the education, and be able to talk to your doctor. I always counsel the patients, if you have questions, seek your doctor's advice.
Well, Dr. Best, we're seeing statistics from healthcare institutions, nursing homes, hospitals, where a great share of the staff are refusing it. What does that say about vaccines?
I think that once again, we have to go back to education. And this is something that as a system we are trying to tackle, because we've seen that. Seen pockets of staff in the system that are not getting the vaccine or reluctant to get the vaccine. And one of the things that we are doing is having weekly videos or the CEO answering questions from the staff, from the healthcare workers in general, about the vaccines, trying to mitigate some of these questions and concerns.
Dr. Srinivas, other states are having lotteries. Mm-hmm. Get a vaccine. You can maybe win $1 million. Is that something that would be effective in places in Iowa where there's great reluctance to get the shot?
So we've seen that incentive systems do work. We saw in New Orleans that just having people who are willing to vaccinate out during the time when people are going out at night and saying, hey, this bar is partnering with us, we'll give you a free drink if you get your Johnson & Johnson one-shot vaccine, was extremely effective. So there is a lot of messaging. There's this whole attitude of convenience that we also need to meet. There's incentives that we can utilize. But then there's also the issue of inequities when it comes to vaccine availability that we need to address that has often, unfortunately, been overlooked. If you look right here in Iowa, we're actually one of the worst 5 states in the country when it comes to equity between the races that have been vaccinated. Here, about 2.5 times as unlikely for a black person to have been vaccinated as a white person, just based on race alone.
So what do we do about that?
We really need to create partnerships with these different communities that have ways to access populations that they're able to trust. So Broadlawns, for instance, they partnered with a local church that works a lot with a black population here in Des Moines. And they were able to meet them where they are. They were able to help with transportation because they brought the vaccine to them.
Is there anything about Iowa that makes us unique in battling this disease in our population? We're an older population, mm-hmm. rural. We have a large meatpacking yep. sector. Anything that you can see that makes us different, that means our approach has to be different?
Well, language is a huge barrier because we do have a large migrant population because of our farms, because of our meatpacking industry, and in our rural set of living and our economics, we do need to overcome language barriers. But then because of that and because of the migration issues surrounding this, there's a lot of fear amongst some of my patients who are worried that if they show up for a vaccine, they're going to be questioned for papers or they won't be given a vaccine. So there's a lot of information that we just need to override and bring vaccines to people where they are.
Dr. Best, language barriers?
Absolutely. I totally agree with that being one of the biggest concerns. And we have to get to these communities with understanding what are their concerns and their needs to get the vaccines. This is extremely important to get vaccinated people in Iowa. But I do agree that language barrier is a big issue here. And I know that we have people actually sending messages through social media, interviewing physicians in other languages to give a more direct message to their own communities.
Dr. Best, this is all the first round of things. Do we have a sense yet? Are we going to need a second shot? Are we going to need, they call it a booster sometimes. Do we have a sense yet of whether we'll need to ask folks to get this again?
We don't know yet. Pfizer has mentioned that they are preparing a booster shot, but as of the studies are going, we don't know for sure if we are going to get to that point. Actually, some of the virologists in the world feel that actually we won't need one, but it's too soon to know.
Federal funds are coming down. Dr. Srinivas, how should those be used in the healthcare setting, if available?
So it's going to be a multitude of things. When it comes to the healthcare setting, what happens outside of healthcare is actually so important to what happens within healthcare. That's really the whole aspect of the social determinants of health, enabling people to have successful quality of life and livelihoods enables them to have better health. So really being able to support people in their everyday goals of trying to have a quality life when it comes to food, when it comes to giving their kids transportation, education. That's going to help us enable them to have better access to preventive care, such as vaccinations, such as information like seeing a doctor, seeing a provider that can help them with their health. So that's really what we need to have a holistic approach with a lot of these funds.
Dr. Best, you work at a hospital here in Des Moines. There are concerns in the rural hospitals about how the pandemic has affected them. What are the needs out there and what needs to be done to make sure our rural hospitals survive this?
And that has been a big gap, definitely. What we've tried to do, particularly as a health system, is to work as a system-wide, trying to expand to the most rural areas and be available for them. And we started with things like, for example, creating a hotline for COVID that was staffed by us, the own infectious disease physicians, to be available for the community doctors to call and ask questions on how, what to do with their patients, how to manage patients in the rural areas. And we have continued with a series of education with webinars and stuff like that to kind of keep the staff, the providers, up to date as well. And always recognizing that if they have any questions, if patients have any questions, they need to get back to their doctors.
Dr. Srinivas, there's been a lot of discussion about improving the heating and ventilation systems in big facilities like schools. Is that effective?
So ventilation is really important at helping to reduce transmission. Ventilation can be as simple as having windows open and having a breeze helping to circulate the air within a room. But the better available ventilation is, the better it is at reducing actual transmission between students. But the best thing that we know is masking. It really prevents a lot of these concerns. So if we can just continue to have students mask in schools, having to spend a lot of money on ventilation isn't going to be as big of an issue, especially as more and more people get vaccinated.
Dr. Srinivas, and both of you really, what are the messaging? What are the do's and don'ts of dealing with someone who doesn't really want to get the vaccine? Maybe you have a loved one, maybe someone watching this program. What are the do's and don'ts of trying to convince people that they ought to get the vaccine? You know, we're Americans. We don't take kindly to people telling us what to do. I mean, that's why we're Americans. And so what do you do in a case like that?
So the first thing is really to understand the other person's perspective. So anytime I see a patient that has hesitation, I don't give them information. I instead ask them, why are you concerned? What are your questions? What are your worries about this vaccine? I let them ask me the questions so that way I can really address their fears. And in all honesty, every single clinic I have had since the vaccine has been available to my patients, I have been able to change the minds of at least one person by merely answering their questions.
Dr. Bessenson.
I fully agree with Dr. Genevas. I think that listening to our patients is very important. And as she said, not giving it the lecture. I mean, nobody wants to be lectured, right? We want to hear and understand what is preventing them from getting the vaccine, because a lot of the times we can convince them. After talking to them, a lot of my patients have left the clinic saying, we are going to schedule a vaccine.
Would it have been better if the vaccine had been distributed to healthcare agencies rather than mass clinics?
I think that that would have been an amazing thing to do, more available for the providers to have it in the clinic. Unfortunately, logistically, it's been an issue, and in the refrigeration for Pfizer vaccine particularly has been a very limiting factor.
And unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you both for taking some of your time to be with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
And we'll be back next week with another edition of Iowa Press at our regular times, 7:30 Friday night and noon on Sunday. For all of us here at Iowa PBS, I'm David Yepsen. Thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Iowa PBS is supported in part by Wells Fargo. Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.